October 2nd, 2022. Ward Green here. I believe I've got my OBS studio program set up slightly better now. Oh, I cleaned my camera lens. I had a problem. I've had a problem ever since I got my M1 Max. I'm horrified to find out that I never cleaned the lens. Or, I mean, since very early on, I didn't clean the lens, and I've had this blurry image. But I've had other things, you know, so many other things going on in my upgrade path and so on. I just didn't think of, you know, I wasn't concerned about troubleshooting every little thing in my system. So I never got around to checking the lens on the laptop, the MacBook Pro. So it's just nonsense. But now it's much clearer. I believe it's going to work a lot better. Today, little children, we're going to try to read Ecclesiastes chapter 2. Well, we're going to hopefully not just try to do it. We're going to do it, hopefully. But tomorrow will be the 3rd of October. Maybe we should start Psalms 3 and working through the Psalms a little bit from that point, as well as doing Ecclesiastes. That's what I'm thinking. So, Ecclesiastes chapter 2. And I haven't done any other than the setup that I did on OBS after I cleaned the lens, and today I resized it to make it even larger, and I got the view a cleaner screen view. What's the word for this? Screen capture view. So other than that, which only took me a few minutes, all told, I haven't done anything to prepare this session. I'm feeling that, you know, the more contrived I get with my sessions, the more, you know, depressing it's going to be, the worse it's going to be. So that's why I'd rather get started and trust in Jehovah to provide me with the proper inspiration and so on. And I thought of something today also. We often think about, I was thinking to myself, I said to myself, I'll make some rice maybe today. And then I realized, then I remembered that thing I often think about. We don't make rice. I mean, rice has to be grown by, not just by human effort, but Jehovah makes it grow, right? I mean, we don't even understand how rice grows or how any plants grow or any of it. It's all Jehovah. He does everything to create it and then make it grow, and to create the atoms and molecules and make them grow. That's all done by Jehovah. So the atoms and molecules, of course, may have been created some time ago in the Big Bang, but the process of growing that we witness is really unexplained, although we imitate everything to do with creation in our human creations, but we don't really understand the creations of the Creator, the original Creator, the one who created things. And if we ignore that, if we try to say that, well, everything is only to do with humans, and there is no one other than the human race who can create things, or, well, some animals create things too, we know. But if we've seen that, we could see how some birds can make tools and use them and so on. But if we think that there's only creation and there's no creator, we're ignoring something. That's all. And we have a need to, humans have a need to worship. So if we ignore the true God, we're going to then substitute some other false God in his place. It's inevitable. And I don't know why I'm talking about that, but the thing is, it reminds me of something. When I've watched a movie, even if it was years ago, if I watched a movie, when I watched the movie, in the past, my brain has stored all these tidbits. Everything about that movie is stored in my mind. And I don't really believe it is. I don't know that it is. except when the certain part of that movie arrives 1 second, 2 seconds, 5 seconds before something happens in the movie, I say something that then proves that I've stored that information, because then the movie echoes that thought that I had spoken just before it happens in the movie, unconsciously, you know, without knowing that it's in the movie. But my brain stores all those things. And I know that because I've witnessed this phenomenon over and over, where I have complete recall of a movie, apparently, because I can, well, of course, I don't know how complete, but I recall certain points in the movie because I can, without trying, I mean, it's subconscious. I just say things, or they come to my mind just before they happen in the movie, but it's only significant when I actually do something that mimics what happens in the movie. Then I can see, if I just think it, well, that's not going to be memorable afterwards, or provable. I can't prove it. But if I say it, especially if someone witnesses the fact that I said it, then it's pretty strong evidence that the brain has the ability to store, my brain, the human brain anyway, probably, not just mine, can store all this information, and does store it all, and keep it, or the certain parts of it, stored permanently, or as long as we're alive, and probably as long as we're faithful too, because if we're not faithful, we can't expect to have the same results. You know, if we deviate from everything we learn, if we abandon things we learn, and we don't hold fast to what we learn, then we're not going to be able to manifest those things we've learned in our lives, right? I mean, it makes sense. If we're faithful, or loyal, this comes to brand loyalty again. If we're loyal to ourselves, then all the information that we have in our brain, we're trying to keep it true and accurate. We're not trying to forget it all. We don't want to learn and then forget what we learned, or substitute the opposite or something. You know, we want to learn and continue to use the information. So, and the other thing is, we can incorporate a lot of information, and there's no limit to how much you can put in. And when I was writing music, I remember I was putting in a lot of information. And you have to listen to music until you're absolutely, completely convinced that everybody who creates music is unsatisfactory. That's the word. So that when you get to the point where all the other artists are unsatisfactory, that's when you need to create your own music. Because you've gotten to the point where you understand what they're doing well enough that you have an opportunity to improve upon what they're doing and substitute your own version of it. And that's what I think I was doing when I was writing my songs, even though they may not sound very complex, or they may not be very complex. But they were incorporating a lot of what I was learning. I mean, everything, always everything I was learning was being incorporated, but you know, not all of it explicit, but it's all incorporated in the creations that we make. Everything we know should be incorporated in the creations that we make, or the best of what we know. That's what it is. The best of what we know should be incorporated, because not everything is equally useful. So let's find out what chapter 2 of Ecclesiastes is about, little children. I think it's going to be clear. This is one of the crucial teachings about intoxication and things like that, about how they don't lead anywhere. Okay, the idea, and this King Solomon, this person who wrote this, was somebody who tried a lot of different things to find out whether he could improve upon his life. And one of the things he tried was intoxication. So we're going to read about this. Ecclesiastes chapter 2. Jehovah, our Father in heaven, we would ask you to help us now in our study of Ecclesiastes. In Jesus' name, amen. I said, even I, in my heart, do come now, let me try you out with rejoicing. Also, see good, and look, that too was vanity. I said to laughter, insanity, and to rejoicing, what is this doing? I explored with my heart by cheering my flesh even with wine, while I was leading my heart with wisdom, even to lay hold on folly until I could see what good there was to the sons of mankind in what they did under the heavens for the number of the days of their life. I engaged in greater works. I built houses for myself. I planted vineyards for myself. I made gardens and parks for myself, and I planted in them fruit trees of all sorts. I made pools of water for myself to irrigate with them the forest, springing up with trees. I acquired men servants and maid servants, and I came to have sons of the household. Also, livestock, cattle and flocks in great quantity I came to have, more so than all those who happened to be before me in Jerusalem. I accumulated also silver and gold for myself, and property peculiar to kings and to jurisdictional districts. I made male singers and female singers for myself, and the exquisite delights of the sons of mankind, a lady, even ladies. And I became greater and increased more than anyone that happened to be before me in Jerusalem. Moreover, my own wisdom remained mine. And anything that my eyes asked for, I did not keep away from them. I did not hold back my heart from any sort of rejoicing. For my heart was joyful because of all my hard work. And this came to be my portion from all my hard work. And I, even I, turned toward all the works of mine that my hands had done and toward the hard work that I had worked hard to accomplish. And look, everything was vanity and a striving after wind. And there was nothing of advantage under the sun. And I, even I, turned to see wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the earthling man do who comes in after the king? The thing that people have already done. And I saw, even I, that there exists more advantage for wisdom than for folly, just as there is more advantage for light than for darkness. As regards anyone wise, his eyes are in his head, but the stupid one is walking on in sheer darkness. And I have come to know, I too, that there is one eventuality that eventuates to them all. And I myself said in my heart, an eventuality like that upon the stupid one will eventuate to me. Yes, me. Why then had I become wise? I overmuch so at that time. And I spoke in my heart, this too is vanity. For there is no more remembrance of the wise one than of the stupid one to time indefinite. In the days that are already coming in, everyone is certainly forgotten. And how will the wise one die? Along with the stupid one. And I hated life, because the work that has been done under the sun was calamitous from my standpoint. For everything was vanity and a striving after wind. And I, even I, hated all my hard work at which I was working hard under the sun, that I would leave behind for the man who would come to be after me. And who is there knowing whether he will prove to be wise or foolish? Yet he will take control over all my hard work at which I worked hard and at which I showed wisdom under the sun. This too is vanity. And I myself turned around toward making my heart despair over all the hard work at which I had worked hard under the sun. For there exists the man whose hard work has been with wisdom and with knowledge and with proficiency. But to a man that has not worked hard at such a thing will be given the portion of that one. This too is vanity and a big calamity. For what does a man come to have for all his hard work and for the striving of his heart with which he is working hard under the sun? For all his days, his occupation means pains and vexation. Also during the night, his heart just does not lie down. This too is mere vanity. With a man, there is nothing better than that he should eat and indeed drink and cause his soul to see good because of his hard work. This too I have seen, even I, that this is from the hand of the true God. For who eats and who drinks better than I do? 4. To the man that is good before him, he has given wisdom and knowledge and rejoicing. But to the sinner, he has given the occupation of gathering and bringing together, merely to give to the one that is good before the true God. This too is vanity and a striving after wind. That was Ecclesiastes chapter 2. A remarkably and indescribably wise. I mean, just there's no way to describe how wise that is. It talks about things that many of us, probably all of us, have experienced if we're old enough to experience them. That life appears to be futile even when we work hard, and we reach the point of futility. The harder we work, the more futile it can seem. Even when we get, even when we work very hard, we realize when we pass away out of this earthly realm, or at least, you know, until we have, and in this system of things, while we still have death among us, when we pass away out of this earthly realm, what we have will be given to someone else who may not be as wise as us, and it's beyond our control what happens to the things we did, the things we created. After we die, we cease to have control over those things. We don't know what's going to happen, and that's a very scary thought. It's a very saddening thought. It's a sobering thought too. It's this vanity idea of things are vanity. It's in a way, things are futile. Our activities are futile. Futility is another word that could have been used here instead of vanity. Yeah, he could have said, that's right. That would be another translation here, where this translation says, where does it first use the word vanity? Oh, it doesn't use it in the first few paragraphs here. The first 9 verses, I don't think it uses the word vanity. Or 10, let's see. There it is. In verse 11, I think? Yeah, in 11, everything was futility, it could say. Look, everything was futile, it could say, and a striving after wind. Right? It could say futility instead of vanity. Everything was futility. Because that is a more common modern expression for that idea. Vanity sounds like... But vanity is a better word because vanity... Actually, vanity is a better word because it implies... It, you know, vanity means 2 things, I guess. It means it's futile, and it also means that it's the opposite of humble. You know, it's self-aggrandizing, or it's self-exalting vanity, you know, where we do it because we think we're something special, or we're something great, we're someone great, and we want to do something great to reflect how great we are. That's vanity. That's the idea of vanity. That's why the word vanity is more appropriate to describe what's really going on. And the other idea of vanity is it doesn't have a purpose, right? There's no purpose to it. Let's look up vanity. Let's try and find out what vanity means. Oh, I know. Yeah, I've got a dictionary here. But if I pop it up on my screen, I'm going to lose my... No, I won't. Will I? Yes, I will. I'll lose my screen momentarily. It'll pop up on the screen here. Don't know what that shows now. Vanity. I know I was looking up Chad, but it wasn't in the dictionary. I had to look it up online. Vanity, excessive pride. Or futile. That's meaning number two. Futile, right. Or it's a bathroom unit or a dressing table, right? There's another thing that it is. But, okay, that's good. Let's see what we can do with... Let's get OBE back on the... Well, let's get... Or, there we go. It's OBS, not OBE. I think OBE is something to do with computer programming, maybe? What is OBE? I don't know. I'd have to Google that online, though. It's the British Empire, the Order of the British Empire, right? That's right. That's what it is. That might be the only thing it is that I was thinking of. I'm not sure. It might have to do with object-oriented object, something environment, like to do with programming. I'm not sure. Doesn't really matter. But I used to do programming in an environment called Black Box, and it was Oberon. That's right. OBE is the first few letters of Oberon too. That might be what I was thinking of, actually. What was I looking at here? Was it something else? There. That's probably how I had it before. Anyway, so my brightness, I mean. So this is a much better screen configuration using OBS, right? What's the name of the program? Let me do this. Let's see here. What's it called, this program? I want to find out what it's called. It's OBS Studio. Oh, yeah, right. But I thought it was called... I thought the S stood for Studio, but... It's... Anyway, it's a great program. I think I'll research that later. And I had... Okay, yeah, there's some other things I could talk about today that I'd like to talk about today, actually, that I would like to talk about. I talk about these things all the time, like every day. Life can get boring sometimes. And I try to keep life... Well, it's not just about keeping it interesting, but it keeps it interesting when you realize that there's probably something you need to do today that's urgent. And if you don't do it today, you're going to be in trouble. When you realize that every day is like that, then life is more interesting because you've got something today that you've got to do. And if you think it's boring, then that usually means today's the day you have to buy something new. It's going to change your life for the better. Like, that's probably what it means. If life seems boring today, it's just because you aren't looking for that interesting thing you need to do. And sometimes, very often, it's you need to upgrade something to buy some new product to, you know, revolutionize your life, because technology is moving forward all the time. So you have that opportunity to upgrade things every day. Every day. It's amazing. And you've probably got the money to do it as well. You just don't realize. It's not always expensive to do it. The other thing, because technology, and especially China, is advancing so fast that it's possible to get very inexpensive solutions that solve a lot of problems that are very future-looking and phenomenal. I just bought a new toothbrush. It arrived yesterday. So I've got my second toothbrush now. I don't know how long the battery will last on that one. But when I buy a lithium-ion toothbrush, I always look for the most recent model of these things, the most recent one that I can get. But I want to buy the cheapest, the least expensive, because they do easily... They do prove defective sometimes, or the battery is too old or whatever, and you end up either having to fight for a refund, and then if you get a refund or you get a replacement, maybe the replacement's also going to be defective. You know, you get, so I don't bother with replacements or refunds. I just go with buy as cheap as I can get for what I need. And I didn't used to do this. When I had more money, because my wife used to earn so much more money than I, you know, I mean, we saved a lot of, she and I saved a lot of money too. Planning, she was planning for my future. But we spent a lot of money. We had so much money. I used to buy, like, instead of buying just the cheapest Sonic toothbrush, I wouldn't buy the most expensive, but, you know, I would never buy the cheapest, because we had enough money that it didn't make sense to buy the cheapest. But, and this is the way also my dad thought about buying the cheapest. That was his way of doing things. So, I mean, now I'm more like the way my dad did things. I'm doing things more like the way my dad did things, the way he bought everything as cheaply as possible. And I never agreed with him back then. I never understood his reasoning, but I completely understand his reasoning now, because I see that money runs out very quickly when you're buying things for just even for general consumption. Like, well, now I buy my matcha tea. I upgraded my matcha tea purchase, though. So the last time I bought matcha tea, I bought the very best matcha tea grade, the best grade I could buy, which is the ceremonial grade, the best, the most expensive, too. And I knew that once I do that, I'll never go back again. Although, no, that's not true. I might, because, I mean, I probably won't. But what, see what happened, unless I change, you know, buyers or something. But because years ago, I used to buy the ceremonial when Ann and I had more money. When Ann was still with us, we had more money. I bought the ceremonial matcha tea because it was the best. We had enough money, so why not? Same with the toothbrush. I would buy what I thought was the best toothbrush. It wouldn't be the most expensive, probably. I'm not even sure. Maybe I don't even know if they. I didn't buy the $100 or $200 toothbrush, I don't think. But I would probably buy $80 or $100 toothbrush instead of a $30 toothbrush, Canadian dollars. Now I buy a $30 toothbrush, and I'm thinking, well, that's fine. I can buy it. I can buy those every few years, and it's not going to take a big chunk out of my budget. But anyway, getting back to the tea. So I was buying the ceremonial tea for years because we were buying it at the health food store. We'd go out and we'd shop and we'd pick up some of the matcha tea while we were at the store buying our basic, you know, goat's milk and other things we bought, salad or whatever else we were buying, lettuce, I mean, things, ingredients for salad or everything we bought. And we ate a lot of different food then that I'm not eating now, too. I should say, well, possibly. Oh, but we bought apples and things. We bought fruits and things, you know. So I'm still doing that. A lot of things we did, I'm still doing. But I've refined my, let's just say I've refined my eating habits. Not that I'm depriving myself at all. I've refined it. And I don't have another person who's eating with me right at the moment, so I don't have to think about that aspect of it. So we're not buying for two people. But which means I can't buy a lot of meat and things that don't keep. I can't buy things that I need to consume it rapidly. But with two people, it would be easier. I can't buy a lot of those things, which is no trouble to me, really. I can still buy small portions of meat or fish or things. But the matcha tea that I used to buy, then I bought in bulk some matcha tea, and when I got it, it wasn't even organic. So, but it was still from Japan, and that's just as good as organic in North America. If you get it from Japan, Japan is very, very developed in their approval of food. Their food regulation. And the idea of organic in Japan, which means a lot more than it does in North America. But anyway, and in South America, it might mean less than it means in North America. But anyway, I was buying in bulk from Japan. That was my matcha tea, and I still have some of that left over, but I'm not using it because I bought the organic, not the ceremonial, the summer harvest organic on Amazon. And once I started buying on Amazon, that's a new buyer again. I ended up going, you know, I was buying, I bought in bulk through my health food store, my local health food store in Manitic. And then I bought at that time, 3 kilograms of that. I've used 2 kilograms plus some portion of the last kilogram, but now I'm buying from Amazon because I didn't want to run out, right? So now I'm using the Amazon and saving the older Japanese non-organic. But I should use it really probably, but maybe it's my reserve, unless I mean, in case something really bad happens and we can't get any matcha tea anymore or something. But now I've just finished the last of my summer harvest, so I'm starting the ceremonial, which I've purchased recently. So I'm going to be switching to ceremonial, which is $200 instead of $130 or something. It's a lot more money for the same amount of tea. But the taste is, you know, the quality, the flavor, everything is far superior, so it's not going to be a mistake to do that. However, it means that if I buy, now one of those will last me, or I get 240 grams for $200. It's what, $1 a gram, right? How much are you supposed to put? Is it a part of a gram you're supposed to use when you make matcha tea? I think so. No, it's about a teaspoon they're talking about. Yeah, I don't know how many grams it is. So how many teaspoons? I wonder how many servings you get from 80 grams. I'm thinking you don't get 80, I'm thinking. So one of those is not going to last a month. Three of those might last 2 months, maybe. Is that possible? Let's see. It might be. Or if one of them lasts a month, that's 30 servings from each. That's a couple of grams or so per serving. 30 servings. It's $8. Is that right? No. It's 200, so $6. It might be $6 for a bowl of matcha tea, but I have a feeling it's less than that. I have a feeling that each one of those lasts more than a month. No, it might not. It might last less than a month. Anyway, if one of those lasts, I never worked out the price until now. $200, 6 times 30 is 180, so $6 per serving. It's still not too bad because it's more than a meal's worth of nutrients for sure. When you have them, especially with taken with cream in a latte, you're getting a lot of nutrients there. But the cream costs money too, but nowhere near as much as the matcha tea does. So you're talking about under $10 for a meal every time you have a matcha tea latte, which is a pretty good price. So I mean, it's a great price. The value of what you get. Okay, I just realized something. Wait a minute, hang on, stop. What am I doing here? Let's do this. I made the same mistake I made last time. What's going on here? Oh, here. Yeah, I need to select. Okay, hang on a sec. It's not working here. I can't drag this. I'm going to drag this, though. I'm going to make this bigger. Do I need to do that? No. Yes. Okay, I won't do it that way. Let's just undo that. Let's drag this window. Let's do it again. Using the Alt. Yeah. And drag it. Center it. This is the power of... Whoops. The Alt. Undo. Using Alt, I can resize this window and make it the way I want it. It's better. So, yeah, that way I can. Now, I need to transition. There we go. Hopefully that works. Where's this program going? I can't. It's not showing me the option to resize this or to move it. I can't drag it. I can't see what I'm looking at. I don't think it worked. It didn't work. It looks like it didn't work. Hang on a second. I can't do this. I don't know how to do it. Okay. Let's drag this program. There we go. That's better. Yeah, it did work, I guess. Yeah, there it is. That's better. Finally. Now I can see what I've done. Okay. Oh, no. It's not working, is it? Transition? It didn't work. What's wrong with it? Okay. Resizing. There we go. Let's try this. It's the resizing. It's not working the way it should. So although I'm still recording, thankfully, but it's not. I'm trying to transition here into a. There we go. It's a little better. Yeah, it's just. It's not working the way it's not working the way it was working. Like it's not. It's dismal. Okay, so let's bring it back. Let's bring it back over here like this. That's the way I want to see it. Yeah, perfect. Perfection. Okay. I mean, let's try and make this. Can I make it? No, I can't really make it bigger without. Let's just move it down like that. It's not bad. Try to transition that. I don't know if that's any better. Not bad. It's not bad. So there. It's just nice to be able to control the screen appearance while I'm actually making the video. I'll get better at it, I think. That's the other thing. But I should have resized it as soon as I finished my reading. Would be logical, but I just don't think of it. I didn't think of it. So matcha tea might cost $10 a bowl. Or I'm going to try to work that out. I don't know how many teaspoons is in. Maybe I can Google that. Let's find out. Let's try and find out. Let me try and find out. So how many... No, I might get some reflections when I turn my face. But let's see how many teaspoons in a gram of matcha tea. Half a teaspoon. Oh, wait a minute. A gram is half a teaspoon. Okay, good. So, yeah. Oh, that's good. Because I sometimes use more than a teaspoon, I believe. Very often I use more than a teaspoon, but I don't have to. I can use... So if I could cut it down to... A serving is half a teaspoon. If I could use half a teaspoon, that would be a gram. So then I'd get 80 servings. If I'm using a teaspoon... I'm using 2 grams, which is 40 servings, so one of those cans is lasting me a month. That's probably about right, something like that, but even maybe less than a month, because I'm using a lot of this. I'm using big serving sizes, I believe. So I could reduce the serving size. That's another thing I could do. Once my body starts working more efficiently, and I'm eating less food, eating less sugar, I'll be able to reduce the serving size, I think, and still function with full health, wonderful, maximal health, I mean. So this is great. Okay, so theoretically, half a teaspoon, a gram, is 80 servings, which is one can per 2 months, half a can a month. What is that? Let me think. Okay, half a teaspoon. Let's do it exactly if we can. Let's do it exactly. A gram. Let's figure out how to do it. Okay, 1 gram, 80 servings. Per can. 80, that's 80 times 3 is 240. That's a good number because it divides by 30. So 3 cans is 240 servings if they're each 1 gram. That's 8 months, isn't it? Yeah. Divided by 30 is going to give us 8 months. It's 8 months worth for $200, right? So let's go back to the number of days again. Because I want to figure out how much it was per day, or per serving. But 240 servings... Oh, that's not much. Hang on. That's not much at all. And I paid $200 for 240 servings. It's less than a dollar. That's a great price. That's incredible. 240 servings for $200 is less than a dollar for a serving. But I can make it $3 if I triple the amount of the serving, size-wise. So there we go. That's the answer. So I'm not really paying a lot for the matcha tea. That's phenomenal. Even when I'm buying the most expensive version of it, if I did that calculation correctly, often we make mistakes when we go try to do things in a public forum. And whereas in private, we might be more likely to think of all the things we're doing wrong, but in a public forum, there's just more variety in the public, so that when we're making a presentation publicly, we might make the kinds of mistakes that other people typically make. You know, so that's the danger of performing. It's you open yourself up to the possibility of being too permissive, too having too wide of a perspective and not zeroing in on what's correct, you know, when you're presenting publicly, that's the way it works. So that's why being a performer is such a difficult life. It's hard to maintain your own commitment to what you believe is right when you're exposed to the public every day, because there's so many different ideas of what's right that it's not that your own ideas are being criticized necessarily. That can happen too, but it can be just that you're exposed to options that you have already excluded yourself, but you keep being exposed to other options that, if all you ever see are other options, you may not stick to your own convictions or even remember what they are. That's the danger of public. And it's also it also has benefits, potentially. Of course, we need to expose ourselves to the public. I'm making a video every day. I'm exposing myself to the public. There are many benefits as well to exposing yourself to the public. You get to understand, you learn who your friends are. You get to understand things about yourself that you may not have understood as fully, and so on. So there are just a lot of advantages. There are wise people in the public too. They're not all just, not all seekers and newbies and people who are just starting. There are wise people out there too. There are advantages to teaching a wise person. That's how you get learning, is teach a wise person. So there are advantages in that. That's a proverb. But okay, so we've done Ecclesiastes chapter 2 today. Everything is vanity. Everything is a striving after wind. So what does it mean to strive after wind? Well, remember Ecclesiastes chapter 1, where it said the wind is circling around. So if we strive after wind, we're going in circles. Because the wind on the earth, it moves around, right? And it just continually swirls around. All these tropical storms and everything that happened, that's a circle too. A storm is a circle. These tropical storms and hurricanes, they move in a circle. But the wind is circling around over the planet and continually circles around. So to strive after wind means we are getting nowhere for striving after wind. So Ecclesiastes chapter 2 is part of life, to understand this vanity of life. And also chapter 3 of Ecclesiastes, wow, I almost jumped ahead there. That'll be interesting tomorrow. So every day is an opportunity to make life exciting, okay? And if you're bored, that's a good thing, in the sense that you're free to find out what is exciting that you wouldn't be free to find out if today were too busy. So all you have to do is figure out what could be exciting today if I were to discover what it was. Like, I've been wanting to write a great song, right? So maybe if I'm bored, that means I have enough time to figure out what that great song is. I could do that today because I have have time if I'm bored, right? So, and that's how I wrote my songs. I was always in a state where I have nothing to do. What am I going to do today? That's how I wrote my songs. Because if I wasn't in that state, my song wouldn't have been, it wouldn't have been creative. It wouldn't have been coming from the sense of absolute nothing into something, which is creation. It would have been, if I was busy doing something else and trying to write a song at the same time, the song would have sounded like, well, I'm busy, but I'm writing a song. You know, it wouldn't have been the same thing in terms of the depth of meaning that you get in a song when it comes from nothing and you create it out of, well, it's never, obviously you have an inspiration, you get some idea, but you have a choice of a blank canvas choose anything. You have free choice to choose anything for what you're going to write about. You could write about love. You could write about, you could even write, a song about how you, like the song by George Jones that I heard the other day, about writing a song about a loved one that is gone and whom you miss. That was a tragic kind of song, but it was a beautiful song. But you could write all sorts of different songs. That's more country songs that write about things like that are depressing. I've always tried to write about something that is, I shouldn't say always, but for a lot of my songs, the songs that I felt the most positive about have been the ones that were about love and about really, I think probably only love are the ones that have been positive. I'm not sure. No, that's just right. There's songs. Give me all your best. And well, sort of like songs that are like morals. Show some respect. Give me all your best. All my best is another song I wrote. Let's see. There's a lot of songs that sort of had a moral to them. That they had a moral. Christian Man. That's another song. Songs with a moral or with a message, you know, like you can. What's it called? It's Only Me. That was a song I wrote. You Can Change the World. That was another song I wrote. A lot of songs that I tried to upbuild people. I think I tried to inspire people with the topics I chose. Well, Jim, Jim, Jimmy, or that song. That was more a kind of a. Maybe it's a warning song. Maybe it's a. But it was more of a. I didn't understand what that song was about, really, honestly. It's not a common thing. That was another song I wrote. That was a communication type song. The idea of communication and how we're sometimes disconnected. I think that song was about that. An interesting song. I have some songs recorded by somebody else too, who came to my studio, and I don't know when or how I can release those songs because I don't, of course, have the copyright, or I don't own any copyright, except it was recorded at my studio, so maybe the copyright is vague. But also, I didn't think that the performance was sufficiently good that I wanted to release those songs or pursue them. But they might not be as bad as I think they are. The guitar parts are very well done, but I'm concerned about the vocal parts, that they're not quite on pitch, and that's why. Well, when somebody sings on pitch, it's slightly above pitch, like sharp or on pitch are the preferred ways to sing. Now, sharp is better than on pitch because to most people, sharp sounds on pitch, and on pitch can sound flat. So classically trained singers always sing sharp, okay? Just slightly above the pitch, slightly, and maybe even a little more than slightly, still sounds perfect, and it sounds better than perfect because it sounds like you really have, really hit the note with intent. You know, you've gone even above it. But if you're flat, if you don't hit the note, it really sounds terrible. And that's true of my ear too. To my ear, it sounds terrible. So I can't listen to something if someone's singing flat, and that's the nature of these songs that I have, that were done by somebody who came in on one day and recorded these songs, and they were his original songs. He's a great guitar player, and he was a great guy because he used to perform at drinking establishments, and he never drank, and he never smoked, and he didn't do anything. Other than play his songs. And he played a lot of other songs that weren't his own, I think, too. He didn't just play original. In fact, I don't think he played a lot of original material because people didn't want to listen to original material anyway. That's why it was so difficult for me to perform original material. I couldn't really get a job. Well, I did get one job at one place performing original material, I think downtown somewhere in what part of the town? Somewhere over in Ottawa, somewhere near. I don't know where it was now exactly. It was, it wasn't like downtown, but you know, it wasn't right downtown, but it was essentially downtown compared to where I lived. But I mean, I remember, that was for pay. That job was for pay, I believe. It must have been. Yeah, that was for pay. But I mean, I didn't do that very much. That might have been the only time. I'm trying to think. Well, I got paid for another performance I made somewhere. I remember it was at one of these festivals or something where they paid me to come in and play so many songs. But that was a rather, you know, what's the word, disappointing experience, or because I was trying to perform my song, or maybe I did one, or maybe I did two songs. I can't remember how many songs I did. Maybe it was just one. But they only wanted to. They didn't realize I probably would have performed for free, but or whatever. They just wanted to pay me, and they didn't think they could afford more than one song because they thought I was better than I thought I was, or something. I don't know what it was, but they wanted to pay me. So they wanted to pay me like $50, I think it was, or something. But there were guys on stage who had not set up their equipment yet, and they were coming on after me, and they were going to stay on stage while I was performing, and they were going to set up their equipment while I was doing my song. So that, it was very disappointing. I ended up telling them to get off the stage so I could play my song, and nobody was happy about this, so that one didn't go well. So I mean, yeah, the whole music business, right? It's never going to be as simple as it looks like it is. That's one thing. It's always more complex. There's always other people and problems. You know, not just the people problems, but there's equipment problems. There's many, many problems. These guys just had not set up their equipment. They didn't have any problems. They just hadn't set it up. Just didn't do their prep. For whatever reason, so maybe it wasn't their fault, but I wouldn't have been able to perform if they'd been on stage while I was trying to perform. So I wouldn't have been able to do it. So there was a problem. It was just incompatible. The situation didn't work. So I mean, there's so many issues to do with live performances that there's just too many to mention, I think. So how's my webcam doing? I think it's much better today. I mean, I know it is, but I mean, I think it's going to be great. So I think, the idea of writing, so the problem with, if I want to write a new song, I have to know every song I wrote in the past. So I have to review all of it, and I have to listen to all the current music that's coming out and all the old songs. And I mean, I have to, when I write a new song, I have to be ready to know it so that I'm absolutely on top of it. Otherwise, I'm going to write a song and later say, well, that's not the best I could have done, you know. So it takes a lot of prep. When I was writing songs years ago, I was into everything. Like, even though I didn't listen to everything, and I don't listen to everything now, I still think we should only listen to the best music, and that's it. But I'm missing some of the best music because I haven't yet found it. So, I mean, searching for music is one thing we should do, but we need some divine guidance to help us find find the right music. But listening to some of these guys, like what's his name, Joshua Stefan, is a 43 year old, or he was 43 recently, 40 something year old guitar player, gypsy jazz guitar player, I think you call it, and he plays a lot of blues. He plays more blues than Tommy Emmanuel, and I'm more of a blues oriented guitar player, and probably on piano too. I'm more blues oriented in a way, but I learned blues on the piano later in my piano playing, so it's not like I'm a blues piano player, but I'm a blues guitarist. I love that's how I learned the most about guitar, I think, was when I started, or that's how I enjoy playing guitar anyway, is when I play blues on guitar. That's what I enjoy the most about it. So, and I think that the blues got into me. Well, it got into my soul, but I think the blues is in the nature of the guitar. Blues came about on guitar originally, I believe. It was developed by a guitar player. Somehow, it like all the intervals and the things that are a part of blues fall naturally into the metric of the guitar, or into the form factor, what would we call it, into the into the medium of the guitar, but I mean into the layout, into the architecture. Yeah, maybe that's what it is. Into the design of the guitar. Naturally, it falls into the way the guitar is designed. It naturally falls into the way the guitar is. The idea of blues, or the playing of blues, the, you know, the expression of blues falls easily into the guitar format of the fingerings and, you know, string layout and everything that's there on the guitar. The fretboard, you know, everything. It's easily amenable to the guitar. And that's why, and jazz, to me, see, to me, jazz without blues, it doesn't really have the same appeal somehow. So I love a combination maybe of jazz and blues somehow a little bit. And that's sort of what gypsy, is it gypsy jazz? Is that what it's called? I think it is. But it's gypsy something. But that's what Josho plays, is a lot of that. And there are other guitarists I'm discovering right now who play this style. It's almost like bluegrass. Yeah, it is like bluegrass. That's what it is like, too. Bluegrass is a lot like that, too. So bluegrass artists are another thing to check out, because there's a lot of amazing blues in that and jazz combinations. But the thing is that blues is so universal. It really is. It can be mixed in with pop music. And like there's... You go from the minor to the major in blues. The minor third to the major third, that transition is, to me, that's the essence of sort of, that's the thing I learned later about blues. You don't have to stick to the minor key. You can go from minor to major on the third. You can do that almost endlessly. And I never get tired of it. I never get tired of hearing that. I mean, you don't want to do it in every phrase, I guess. You don't want to use it, but you can. It's almost that, it's that good. Like it's phenomenal. Anyway, I want to study music though, and learn more about composing music, because you can go into study the great composers like Rodgers and Hammerstein and people like, and Irving Berlin, the great composers, some of whom never had any musical training. Like, I think Irving Berlin, I think they said, couldn't even read music. But study the great, great artists of history, songwriting history, the great lyricists, too. Because that's where you can learn how it's possible to write songs that are so good that there's no excuse anymore for not writing a great song when you hear these great songs. Like the songs that were written for The Sound of Music, which won 5 Oscars, I think, for including music, but it won Oscars for different things. But that movie was so well produced, and the songs in that movie are phenomenal examples, too. That was Rodgers and Hammerstein, I believe. So, but there are other great composers. I'm not mentioning the only ones. And when you listen to Tommy Emmanuel in that jam session with those 5 guys, of Stewie French, Michael Fix, Tommy Emmanuel, 4 guys, and Richard Smith, in that four-man jam session that's on YouTube, when you listen to them talk, if you listen to what they say in the background, they mention the names of all these great artists. They mention them in while they're talking in between the songs. So you can learn a lot by listening to these guys, but guys like Tommy Emmanuel, he's one of the few guys who knows all these things. But there are other guys who know a lot of things about the great artists, like Richard Smith knows a lot of things about who were the great writers and so on. So those are things to study when you're writing your songs, or at least when you're not doing anything else, you know, except listening. Study these things so that when you write your songs, you're trying to be the best to accomplish the best song, you know, to write the best song. You're trying to achieve something that will be unforgettable for people. That reminds me, Nat King Cole, unforgettable, right? Anyway, it's October 2nd, 2022, 1626 hours, Ward Green saying, I hope this has been a video of a sufficiently long length. Oh, look at that, it's about an hour. So I love everybody, especially the ones related to me in the faith, and I love sharing with people who are eager to learn, and it's a pleasure to talk to you. I hope you're doing well. Have a great day. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.